Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeta, Evan Basilek, Russell Young, and Sujeet DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information, should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 220, being recorded on the 14th of March, 2018, with special guest Kevin Lamb. I'm Sujeet, and on Skype with me, I have Kale, Russell, Cynthia, and our special guest, Kevin. And we're excited to have Kevin back on our show. He came on almost a year and a half ago, I think, and talk about Logic Apps, and we thought we'd get him back on to give us an update on that and all the other things that he's been working on. But before we get to him, as usual, Kale, Evan, and Russell have done a bang-up job of putting a whole lot of updates in the show notes, so let's just talk about some of those updates today. There's a whole lot of them, guys. Thank you for doing that. What do you guys want to start with?
The big one that sticks out for me is the file sync preview that's available in additional regions, which is basically a way for you to kind of centralize sort of like almost like a file synchronization type model that's bidirectional from 2012 and 2016 servers into Azure Files. So pretty cool thing. Basically, any existing servers, you can put this agent on it. And it is now available in Canada Central and Australia Southeast region. So just kind of growing out. Still in preview, though.
Yeah. Now, didn't you kind of mention this last episode, Kale?
Yeah, I'd mentioned to see if anybody wanted to give us any feedback on this thing maybe expanding beyond this, like to blob storage and things like that, because it's something that I've had to customize and write custom software for before, and I just wondered if everybody else was in the same boat.
It sounds like the product team definitely agrees with you. So, okay, great. What else, Russell? Anything you like there?
Yeah, there's a couple of security updates which are quite good. So there are two sort of GA announcements, one being the storage service encryption with customer managed keys. So that's been there in preview, but that's now GA. So this is quite nice. It allows you to manage your keys in the key vault, and you can cycle them in there, and it doesn't need to re-encrypt all the data, but it will secure your storage account appropriately. That's a nice little feature without sort of exposing any secrets anywhere. And the other one is the just-in-time VM access. So you can set up policies whereby, you know, certain individuals can request access to a VM. You can determine how long after they disconnect that connection's valid for, how long those ports are open, which ports they're allowed to talk to, and so on. So that's now GA as well.
Actually, that's a pretty important one. I know in my customer, financial services customer, they have built special code and logic to do this, the JIT access. And so this is something that's huge. A lot of people want that. I'm glad that's making its way.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, it's just all about, you know, making sure everything's closed down when you're finished with it, really, and only available in the period where you actually want it. So if you're having these constant attacks from random places all the time, then, you know, you're minimizing your attack window, really. Some SQL ones, SQL database ones. There's the information protection one on Azure SQL databases, and it's on-premise as well. So this is quite interesting. I gave it a go the other day. I just kind of stumbled across it in the portal. So it looks over your SQL database and uses some kind of logic to try and determine what classification from a security and information protection point of view your fields are. So it will highlight stuff that's possibly a GDPR type field, and it applies some kind of rules and classifications to those. So you can then pull off some reports, you can do some advanced auditing, you can hide data from certain parties and so on and so forth. So that, I think, is going to be a really great tool from the information protection point of view. Have you come across that one before, Suja? Have you used it at all?
No, I haven't, but I can see that there's a lot of use cases for that. So I'm glad you brought it up.
Pretty impressed with how it did a job on analyzing my data sets, actually. And
was it easy to use? Yeah,
button ticks. I mean, I stumbled across it because I was just doing a quick, I was looking at the security advisor, and that pointed me through to it and said, oh, you need to do this, use this information protection stuff. And off I did, and just kept sort of clicking. And there it came up with a great graph of classifications for my data fields and stuff. So, yeah, quite impressive. There's obviously quite a bit of AI behind it as well.
Yep. There's been a few couple of things on the app dev side as well, right, which have been interesting this past week. I think the influx of Java inside of the app service has something that has really come up nicely. Now, if you use the web app service or the app service with the Linux option, you could run Java applications on that now in a kind of a managed environment, so that otherwise you had to do all sorts of, you know, funny things to run Java apps. But now inside of the Linux, you could use a Tomcat server, for example, and an OpenJDK, you know, just run all your Java apps right there in a managed environment. So I thought that was pretty cool.
That's been quite a long time coming, isn't it? It's good to see it there now.
Yep. And then kind of related to that is, you know, now they have Spring Boot 2.0 and Azure Starters with the Azure Starters extension and VS Code. So lots of, you know, Java and Linux support and open source support coming in, which is very nice. And Spring Boot's obviously a very popular Java framework.
So does that mean VS Code? I wasn't aware of this, but I guess VS Code can now do Java stuff? Is that what that's meaning?
No, it could always do Java stuff. It now actually, you know, does like Spring Boot, Spring Framework applications specifically. You know?
I see. So are they like plug? I guess I'll have to take a look at, I guess, their extensions.
Oh, the extension,
right?
Model. Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Cool.
One more important one on the SQL side. The managed instances.
That's a big one, huge one. Yes.
Yeah. So that's been a long time coming, but that's good to see that there. So that's a preview that's been announced. But for those that don't know, it's kind of like a step in between running SQL in VMs and running Azure SQL as a fully PaaS service. It's kind of something slightly in between. I'm not sure on the, you know, all the details behind it. Maybe Evan, you know some more. Okay, or rather.
I can speak to it because I know my customer had looked at that. I think what this was called, CloudLifter was the code name, I believe. And so this, you know, customers want to use SQL Server, but they, because of concerns with regard to their, you know, the data and where it is and have control over that, they don't like the SQL Azure service, right? Because you kind of just don't know where your data is. On the other hand, having the IaaS version was always a pain to maintain. And so Microsoft said, hey, you know, we'll maintain your IaaS version for you, essentially, in this managed service. So you kind of have a little bit of the best of both worlds, you know. And I think it's got a lot of support from customers. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it.
So I guess the SQL machines themselves are running within your own VNets and things.
Correct.
In this case, yeah.
Exactly. You have,
so you've got that
it's
nice
completely
isolation
within the customer's network, but Microsoft manages it for you.
Right, okay. Cool. And the other one was about Microsoft and Esri launching some geospatial AI, but I've not gone into the detail on that one. It looks like, you know, some kind of capability around location information and you know, geography type stuff. I've not gone into the detail of that. I don't know if you've had a chance to read that one.
No. Well, I guess we'll have to dig into that a little later, but that's about what I got, you know. It just opens up a whole bunch of new application use cases for, you know, I mean, there's a lot of information out in maps, but no one's ever really figured out how you could extract useful artificial intelligence information out of it, and I think Microsoft has that AI capability, so they're just trying to match the two with something cool.
I think it'd be interesting to get somebody in who knows a lot about this area for a future podcast, actually. It's quite an area of interest for lots of people at the moment.
I agree. Hey, did we talk about the traffic analysis service? I think we didn't do that yet, right? Evan put this one in there, and that's actually very cool. We actually just used this at my customer just recently. So, you know, Network Watcher came out a short while ago, and that creates these things called flow logs, right? Flow logs essentially monitor how the industries are being applied in different parts of your network, and so it kind of generates all this information about where the packets are going. But what traffic analysis does, it takes all that information, which is a lot of information, right, and it creates like this knock view, you know, like, you know, the canonical NOC view where you see the picture, you know, the map of the world, and you see all the nodes and all the links between the nodes and everything. And so it kind of shows you that you can drill down into a particular area, into a particular region, and see all your services and how they are connected. And it helps you identify, you know, potential security issues or hotspots between particular links. You might not realize that, you know, you were going from East US to West Europe by mistake, and things like that. So that's what it does. And it lets you do all that analysis for you figure out some interesting security performance issues with regards to your network. And I thought it was pretty cool. Definitely put a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, it looks good.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think that's a good roundup of all the updates. Thanks again for everything, putting all those links in the show notes there. And let's turn over to our special guest, Kevin. Kevin, thanks again for joining us. Please go ahead and reintroduce yourself to our listeners, and and tell us what you've been doing since we last spoke to you, which is probably like a year and a half ago, I think.
Certainly. Hello, everybody. My name is Kevin Lam. I'm a principal program manager on Logic Apps. We've been busy over the last year just making Logic Apps more secure, more manageable, more available, more everything. And it's really come a long way since I talked to you about a year and a half ago, which is just about when we were GAing the product.
Right.
So we've added a ton of features, a ton of connectors, it's really taken off.
Now, what are some of the high-level use cases you're seeing that people are using Logic Apps for? If someone were to say, hey, why should I use Logic Apps? Like, what would be the traditional answer you would give them?
Well, there's a couple of paths that we take. On the one hand, we are promoted as one of the core services in the serverless offerings from Azure. So the core services are Azure Functions, Logic Apps, and Event Grid. And so from Logic Apps, it's the no-code perspective of how to create serverless, with serverless meaning that you don't have to deploy hardware, you don't have to do OS updates, you don't have to think about plans and sizing, and you get micro-billed for each action that gets executed and don't get billed for workload that's not being done. Right. So in the traditional sense, you've always had to deploy to peak load and then have a bunch of unused resources while you're waiting for that peak to occur. On the other hand, we are the iPaaS offering for Azure, so the Azure Integration Services kind of hero product, which is part of that would be Logic Apps, API Management, Service Bus, as kind of the core services of that perspective. And there, we see a lot of customers going ahead and doing their cloud integration scenarios based on Logic Apps. So if you wanted to integrate, either entities in the cloud like Salesforce or Box or Office, SharePoint to Azure services, we like to think of ourselves as the connective tissue for Azure. So, even in Azure, as you think about your storage accounts and your messaging infrastructure for Azure storage queues or message queues to cognitive services so you can build smart integrations. All those things have to come together somehow, and Logic Apps is the great way to do that because we have connectors to all these services, as well as to being able to connect to entities on-prem like your SAP system, your SQL Server, your SharePoint Server, some classic line of business systems with DB2, an AS400 system, et cetera. So, people have really been using it for a lot of these interconnected scenarios, and with this low barrier of entry with the requirement of no code, we see a lot of people doing some very interesting things, from more operational effects of saying, hey, I want to build a Logic App to react to alerts in Azure anytime my VM is running hot for the last 5 minutes, call a Logic App which will then post messages to my Slack to a Slack thread and create a ticket in ServiceNow. And so you're creating a lot more automated scenarios. Another set of scenarios is for what we call data wrangling. Users are looking at, let's say, data in SQL. They want to pull that data from SQL, enrich it by calling other services, and then push it up to, let's say, dynamic CRM. And so you can keep your customer data consistent across multiple different resources. that's, you know, your customer base may, your Salesforce may be looking at. So there's quite a few scenarios, and it ranges from kind of the smaller scale scenarios to other ones that require hundreds of millions of actions per month.
So it's safe to I know in the last time when I spoke to you about this, we kind of alluded to it being like the workflow engine in the cloud. Is that still how it's how it's considered?
Yes, we think of it as the kind of cloud orchestrator. So cloud workflow orchestrator. In the cloud.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Now, I know this early days was a lot of the stuff came from BizTalk, and I'm glad to see that you guys have taken all those enterprise connectors and put them into Logic Apps. But from an application developer perspective, obviously you can build it your own with functions, or you can I guess take it up a notch and then say, okay, I want to use Logic App. What should be the deciding factor for them to decide which of these serverless options to use?
Sure, that's a great question. One of the things that we like to think about for Logic Apps is, you want to have rapid development. You're trying to lower your time to market. And if you don't need to, don't write code if you don't need to. But if you do, of course, Azure Functions is an awesome serverless capability to go ahead and enable you to do that. For example, we have, over 200 connectors to various services and protocols. And, if those are at your fingertips where you can build a Logic App without writing any code to reach out to Salesforce and interconnect it to your Azure services, then take that ease of path. And as you need to do more, get more intimate with the code, we have great interoperability with Azure Functions where we automatically discover the functions within your Logic App. So, we work really well together for both Logic Apps and Functions. And we promote ourselves that way as a great way to ensure that you can do rapid development but still have access to code through the combination of Logic Apps and Functions.
That's a very nice way to put it. Thank you. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember when we were looking at ASE, or what is now Application Services Isolated, I think, SKU, that didn't have Logic Apps in it. Is that something that's been changed since in the recent past? Is that part of the Isolated SKU, or is it a separate thing now?
Great question. So Logic Apps is not part of the apps service environment. It's not part of app services in that sense.
Okay.
So it's a different architecture. So that's I'll say that first.
Okay.
So that's why it's not, you wouldn't find it in an ACE, an app service environment, because we're not part of that infrastructure. But that being said, we're actually currently working on an isolated offering at the moment that should be out later this semester that you can go ahead and build out kind of a similar way to an ACE, where you can go ahead and connect to VNets and have dedicated resources all available to you through Logic Apps isolated offering.
Is that just to protect the public endpoint? Is it like a way of putting a firewall in front of it, or is it to totally integrate it within your VNet?
Totally integrated within your VNet. So just as you would configure an ACE, we'd have the same mechanisms to configure a Logic Apps isolated instance.
Okay, great.
And I suppose that would help connecting it to an express route.
Exactly right. Right. So then you can connect directly to your on-prem entities through Logic Apps.
Yep.
Hey, one question I had about the Logic Apps, and especially around the connectors, because there's like a whole plethora of really cool ones now to like talk to all kinds of popular services and those kind of things. But on the custom side, how does that work? Has anything changed there? And how does if my API thing isn't there that I want to use, how do I do that from a high level, like create my own custom connector?
Right. So we in the last, probably at the end of last year, we released a custom connector capability, so you can go ahead and build your own custom connector, and that can connect to either a REST service or a SOAP endpoint, and it can connect to entities on-prem through the on-premises data gateway. So you can build your own connector that looks just like the other connectors we have available in our public offering for your own usage as well. And so you get the same capabilities of being able to manage your connection separately. So that means your authentication and configuration of the endpoint is distinct from the usage within your Logic App.
That's awesome. Does that only work through like functions, or do I upload code like a DOL or something? Or
no, it's all codeless. So Logic Apps, the designer and the way that we interact with APIs is via Swagger, so the open API spec. And so essentially what you're doing is you're creating your own API description through Swagger, and then that gives us all the information we need to go ahead and treat that connector just like any other connector in our service.
That's awesome. So
if you do need to write code, then you know you can host that, for example, in a web app or an API app, and then create the same codeless wrapper in front of it to get that same experience.
Awesome. That's super cool.
Hey, Kay, are you planning to build a blockchain connector anytime?
Mm-hmm. The thought had crossed my mind. No joke.
If it has a REST endpoint, we can do it.
You know, yeah.
I did a Logic App fairly recently, actually. I was just really impressed at how easy it is. I've not done any Dynamics integration work before. I've not really used Dynamics too much before Dynamics CRM, but it took me about, I think, 5 minutes to get connected, to build the connector, to extract the data that I needed, to then go and parse it, filter it, write it out to a SQL Azure database, and then take it onto post-processing. So a bit of the data mangling, as you called it earlier. But yeah, really easy. And a few years ago, I would have been having to start looking at loads of documentation for REST APIs and all sorts. So yeah, thanks. Save me a load of time.
Awesome. I mean, that would have taken you days to go figure out what the shape of the message is, how you authenticate to it, how you parse all these sub-entities that you get back from Dynamics CRM. So yeah. That's great. That's a great testament that you're able to do it.
In fact, it was quite a large amount of data as well. So it was looping through, doing in chunks. I think it was a few thousand records it's going through. So it worked really well. I did hit a limit, but then I figured out there was a way to get around that and increase that so that it did do it kind of asynchronously as well. So yeah, worked perfectly.
Fantastic.
And now it's scheduled to run every Monday morning or something. So, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, one of the hidden gems that we have in Logic Apps is the scheduling capability, where we have advanced, of course, very simple scheduling, for example, every 5 minutes, every day. But we support more advanced scheduling as well, so the first and last Monday of every month at 3 and 6 p.m., right? You can create advanced schedules like that that's supported by Logic Apps.
Okay. Is there back to the sort of networking and protection of the public endpoints? It's something we come across quite a bit because it's customers and partners kind of get requirements where they want those public endpoints to be as protected as possible. So without resorting to going down an ASE route or a totally isolated instance, is there any other way to kind of protect those endpoints with IP filters or anything like that?
So do you mean the IP endpoint for talking to a request trigger in a Logic App?
Yes, so for an HTTP type endpoint that it's publishing.
So we have static IP addresses for Logic Apps. So one is that if we're calling an endpoint, you will know which IP addresses we're emitting from. So then you can go to your network stack and whitelist just those IP endpoints. And on inbound, you can actually we support the ability to whitelist your own IP addresses so that only certain IPs can call our Logic App.
Ah, okay. Wasn't aware of that. That's good. And is that done within the portal?
Correct. So in the resource blade, there's a settings section you can go to and add IP config to that blade.
Fantastic. Thank you.
That's a feature that I wish all Azure services had, because we come across that all the time, I'm glad you, thanks Kevin for putting that in there, because that's an immediate blocker for a lot of Azure services going into enterprise customers, having whitelisting or blacklisting, depending on how you do it. But sure. Yeah, thanks for doing that. Now, I'm glad Russell brought up the whole development aspect of it. So give us a flavor for what's new and improved on the dev side. I saw the plugin in Visual Studio, for example, I believe. So what's new in that area?
So we added the integration with Visual Studio quite some time ago, but one of the things that we wanted to do was be as consistent as possible with how you deploy and manage other Azure resources. So developing a Logic App within Visual Studio is actually developing within the Azure Resource Group Manager project. And what we do is, with our add-on, we recognize that there's a Logic App definition inside of your ARM template, and then we go ahead and render the designer right in Visual Studio. So you can edit the Logic App directly in your template and then persist that into source control and do your CI/CD capabilities right from there. Nice. We also have Cloud Explorer integration, so if you want to see your live Logic apps or run it right from Visual Studio, you can do that as well.
That is super cool. I'm glad. Yeah, I mean, I think that consistency in the when you create those workflows between the web portal or the Visual Studio is important. I'm glad you guys did that.
So one question I had too, and I'm just totally dumb to this. So when you spin these up, is this like any other kind of PaaS service in respect of if I'm just doing onesie, twosie kind of small things, I can kind of scale it, meaning like I pay at a different tier or something like that, and if I want to
no.
put like massive or nothing?
No, that's the whole idea of serverless. So serverless means I don't have to think about plans. I don't have to think about what's my
awesome.
Capacity before I go ahead and deploy it. With serverless, you get the micro billing. So you just deploy your Logic app, and if you consume more, you pay more. If you don't, you don't. So you could deploy a Logic app and it won't consume. You'd have a bill of zero if you never call it. So we scale
awesome.
At your needs, and you don't have to think about it.
That's awesome.
So you can really go from a one call to a million calls with no change, really. You guys handle
exactly
everything.
Right. Exactly right. There's no knobs or config settings that you want. Now, you know, of course, as you get into more complex or advanced scenarios, there are ways that you can make it more efficient. You know, we have, by design, the Logic app is highly parallelizable, but you can, for example, for some systems downstream, it may overwhelm those downstream systems, so you can control the concurrency of those Logic apps right within the designer or within the portal. So instead of running, you know, hundreds per second, you can change it to only run a few per second.
That's right. I forgot about that. You can actually download things in parallel from different sources and then aggregate all the information back.
Yeah. Right.
That's very, very interesting. Well, yeah, this is good. So is there anything kind of new that's upcoming besides the isolated SKU that you feel comfortable sharing with our listeners?
Yeah, a couple things that are coming down the line is we're in the process of deploying to US GovCloud. So within a few weeks, you should see Logic apps light up in the GovCloud. And that'll be pretty great. We've been asked for that one for quite some time, and we finally got to get ourselves deployed there.
Hmm.
The other thing we're doing improvements to the SAP connector. So with the SAP connector today, you can talk to SAP ECC on-prem. So for those who know SAP, you can talk to it via iDocs or BAPIs. And so now we're adding trigger support and richer schema capabilities, and so making that experience a lot better within Logic apps.
That is very cool. Very nice. It's been really awesome catching up with you again, Kevin, on Logic apps. You're obviously very passionate about it. You were back when we spoke to you last, and I'm glad to see the passion is still alive.
The fire's still there. We still got a lot to do.
You've got lots of more work to do. And I think we talk about serverless a lot on the show, and we spoke to Nir recently on functions,
uh-huh.
and so happy to see the focus on serverless, and specifically with Logic apps, you guys are taking it up to another level. So really nice about that. Any more questions for Kevin before we let him go, guys? Russell,
I've got a quick one. Logic apps. I mean, when it first started out, it seemed to be sort of an equivalent to BizTalk and replacement for BizTalk. Where are we now with that whole story? Is it now the thing that replaces BizTalk? Do we kind of?
I'm glad you brought that up. One of the things that BizTalk is still a great product, and we recently had a release of BizTalk for 2016, at the end of 2016. So it's really kind of January 2017. But for integrating, modernizing your integration, we're recommending people go to Logic apps, and we've kind of grown out of BizTalk. So a lot of the capabilities that you're used to, if you're a current BizTalk customer, are now available up in the cloud and Logic apps. So as you're looking at reaching up into the cloud and doing more of those workloads off of on-prem, Logic apps is the place for you to go for that.
So does Logic apps do everything that BizTalk used to be able to do? Or can it?
I wouldn't quite say everything. There's a few things that aren't there. For example, the BRE, the Business Rules Engine, and a couple of the accelerators aren't there yet. For example, Swift. isn't there yet. But as we get more demand for those, we will prioritize those workloads and put it on there. But in terms of kind of raw capability of the BizTalk engine with the, you know, we had, in for those familiar with BizTalk, you had receive ports and a message box and orchestrations and send ports with the various sets of adapters, mostly focusing on messaging scenarios with orchestration, where in logic apps, we've kind of flipped that where we're in, more of an orchestrator with high touch to a lot of messaging capabilities. And so our service bus kind of takes place of the message box. And a lot of those things that you're used to, for example, convoys. We can do convoys and in-ordered messaging, you know, all in logic apps. So those complex integration patterns that you would like look at Fowler's book for, we do in logic apps.
Okay. So, and is there a simple migration path, or is it always going to involve some kind of rework to build a logic app from what was implemented in BizTalk before?
It will require a rewrite because the imp, if you're familiar with ODXs and orchestrations, you know that that design is quite different from what we have in logic apps. But it gives you an opportunity to actually, you know, enhance it, make it better, make it easier to you know, the design much simpler. Yeah. But one of the things that our MSIT has done is they've built a tool so that if you want to move your trading partner managers, if you're doing trading partner management with AS2, EDIFACT, X12, you can move those trading partners with a tool right up to our integration account that's used by Logic Apps to go ahead and do your B2B workload. So right. At least that is an easy transfer.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Kevin, again, for coming on. And please, if there are any specific links you would like to share with our listeners related to our discussion today, feel free to send them to me. We'll put them along with the recording on the podcast.
Excellent. Thanks for the time, guys.
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle, @AzurePodcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.